really deep inhale. Joy for me to be teaching you this class. I think the fact that you have chosen to come to Hrishikesh at the banks of the sacred river Ganga shows me that I don't need to talk the very initial steps of spiritual understanding. But just to repeat, I think we all know that good and bad is not out there. Good and bad, or the perception of good and bad, is entirely in here. Therefore, spiritual people know, first get the inside right, then the outside will follow. I think you have seen perhaps at the Ganga an irritated tourist who was wondering about seeing here a little garbage and there a little garbage and was totally upset. And you have seen a meditating yogi at the banks of the Ganga showing signs of spiritual attainment like bliss and a calm composure. So it is dependent, these two perceptions, on the two perceptions. The one of the tourist and the one of the yogi are very different because they have a very different mind. In the Bhagavad Gita, the important role of mind and mind control, which is so important in mantra chanting, is highlighted in the sixth chapter on Dhyan Yoga, the yoga of meditation. There it says, Udaret Atmanatmanam Natmanam Avasadayet Atmaivayat mano bandhu Atmaiva ripu atmana. One must deliver himself with the help of his mind. One must free himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is our friend, and it can be our enemy. Only for the person who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. In the following texts, it's even said that one who has been able to bring the mind under submission, he reaches God within his heart. No? He enters the temple, the invisible temple of the heart, and meets everything, eternity, soul, spiritual freedom, and Paramatma, the one who is even beyond the self. Yes. So to do this is done through, let me see here, yes, is done in various ways. the most effective way is mantra meditation. Why is it, can we say such a thing that this is so effective? Well, in mantra meditation, you are not alone, reduced to your own strengths or weaknesses. In mantra meditation, you invoke a higher, superior strength, the strength of divine sound vibration, which is something beyond this world, no? It's beyond us. And this divine sound vibration, for instance, the sacred names, come into your heart like a light that dispels the inner darkness. You don't have to work to somehow bring it out through mind control, sense control, eating control, yoga postures that are aimed at calming the pranas in the body. No, you invite superior help and let that work. This is why this is so much praised in ancient scriptures. I could now rattle off many Sanskrit verses, but please believe me, there are in scriptures which are dated into the first century, there it says, there you find Brahma being approached by a great saint, Narada. Please say, it's good to invoke these names. Narada.
Narada.
Yes. And Narada asked Brahma, the creator of the worlds, what in this, in the coming age of Kali, that's our present age according to the Vedic calculation, is the safest way to bring people across the ocean of troubles that are brought about, you know, short life, short health, a mind that is very easily irritated and not so stable, etc., etc. What can bring people over this ocean? And Brahma, without a hesitation, says, it's the names of the Adi Purusham, the origin of all that is. Then Narada says, what names? There are many, Govinda, Narayan, Vasudev. What names do you have in particular in mind? And Brahma immediately answers. I mean, it is quicker than Chat GPT or whatever it's called. He has no hesitation. He says, it's the Maha Mantra. And then he repeats this. By now, I think you know it. You have sung it multiple times, but let us get some spiritual sound vibration in here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then Narada Muni asked further, well, if this is such a powerful process, there must be many regulation and rules and techniques in order to chant it. And Brahma surprises Narada totally by saying, there is none. If we call that original person, that Adi Purusha, into our heart, it's like calling the sun, which will dispel all the clouds eventually and all the fog and so on. So, yes, this is how this Kali Shantara Upanishad talks about it. But I want to stop here with the traditional thing. You all chant. I mean, do you feel you have come above the clouds and you have come into the presence of of the sun? Is all inner darkness destroyed? And if we are honest, I mean, I can speak for myself, sometimes I have moments of, let me call it above the clouds, you know, in being in the presence of the of this huge, huge source of energy and light, which we call the sun, no? Sometimes I'm under the clouds, even though I chant. And this, for me, was the point from where I started to make my own serious journey in trying to understand the power of mantra and when they work and when they don't work. You must know, I'm on this path now for some time. I started when I was 16, and now I'm supposed to be an old man, but I have said to myself, no, I don't grow older than 40 years. yes, no, there is calendar age. This is very deceptive. Then there's biological age. How good are your organs? That's why we do yoga. No, because we know it will keep our organs intact, and we will be young when we have, when our calendar age is old. But then there is the age you choose. Yes, how you set your mind. And I'm 40. Finished. I stay there. and nevertheless, one day I will die. I know this. But for now, let's stay there. So yeah, mind over matter. That's the idea, which is, there's a lot of research on this. So I started my path when I was even by the calendar age, very young, 16 or so. And after I have practiced for perhaps 15, 17 years, I noticed that the promises of the tradition had not yet come true for me. And I was a little bit in a quandrum, you say, in a dilemma. Should I pursue this path or should I take another path? And at that time I had already accepted my spiritual master, and I had been impressed by his saintliness and his insights and his own spiritual achievements, that I thought, I look like a quitter when I just give up. Let me find out what he teaches, what the tradition teaches, what the line of enlightened soul teaches, and let me make a study. And yeah, I did this and solved my crisis. So now I'm sitting before you, and I'm very excited, very excited, because I have watched you over 2 days, the last 2 days, and I've danced with you, I've laughed with you, I have raised my arms with you, I have eaten with you, and I've seen there are very, very sincere souls amongst you, and very advanced people also in their journey. So therefore it's like sharing the best thing I have with the people with whom I've broken bread. That's how Gauravani explained it yesterday. You know? We all bleed. What do we all bleed? We all breathe. We all break bread and something else. So good. So please listen carefully. I will talk a little bit now from one spiritualist and share my little treasures from with all of you. So please receive it in a careful way. When we do anything, especially when we do spiritual practice, we have our three human gifts with us. The first gift is our physical body. A wonderful gift, we can't stop to appreciate how the cells, the organs, the nerve systems, how they all work, like a huge concert. And if we know how to they work and how to bring them to our benefit, they work very nicely. Second human endowment or gift is our mind, which can walk and wander and go very swiftly, which is so active and agile, which can penetrate walls, mountains. You know, we can think now outside of this room and so on. It's a huge gift, our mind. And the third gift is our heart. And with this, my dear people, I don't mean our physical heart, that part in us that pumps 7,900 liters of blood in a day through our whole system. I don't even mean our emotional heart, a place where we feel, where we hope, where we feel also hope and hurt and everything in between and more. With the heart, I here refer to that spiritual place in which the soul, God, eternity, and all our spiritual possibilities are situated. So as we chant, go to the chanting of the mantra, sometimes we hear kirtan leaders say, give your everything. What they mean is, give your body, your mind, and your heart to the practice, because then miracles can unfold. When we align body, mind, and heart to the practice, you will very quickly experience the full revelation of the divine sound, which carries so much in it, like a seed, you know, carries a banyan tree in it. The divine sound carries in a potential form so very much in it, because the divine sound is not from this world. Fortunately, it is from the other. It is from the other dimension, the spiritual dimension. So, okay, what do we do? Let us start with the body. The first thing we do when we are entering the chanting of the mantra is we take on a posture, an upright posture. You can align your spine, you can think as you are, having heard many times in your yoga classes, something pulls you up, you might bring your shoulders like this, first to the ears and then let them fall to increase your breathing volume. And that alone creates a subtle shift in your mind. Then, as you chant, you use your vocal cords to make a nice sound. You listen or absorb the sound vibration very directly, and you stay in an attentive, receptive position. Let's do this with a monosyllable mantra, Ram. Again, you must know by this one syllable mantras, you have in this mantra you have about 50% of the sound in the open mouth posture, open mouth situation, and then you let it vibrate through every cell of the body. So you gently then close your mouth. Please look me. Look at me, and I will do it for you one time and then we will do it 5 times together. Don't be shocked when you do it the first time. Something will happen if you do it. It's a very powerful sound. So, obviously a deep inhale. Don't do it at the present moment. Just listen and look at my mouth, please. Deep inhale, please. There was once a very happy sadhu. He was always happy. He sat before a straw hut. When the door of the straw hut was closed, he was meditating inside. But usually he would receive people. And once a very, very miserable person came to him and said, "My wife left me, my son doesn't follow me, my oxen doesn't follow me, my field doesn't yield any harvest." And as he was spoken, he was like this. Like this. Then the sadhu, who was always sitting like this with a heavy smile, he went like this. Then he, don't be shocked by what you hear. "It works! I also become depressed." Posture is so important in mantra chanting. In life also, if you go like this through the streets of Rishikesh, soon a brick will fall on your head. Hare Krishna, little joking. It may not be a brick, it may be some other misfortune. Let's go to the mind. My dear everyone, the Western civilization in which most of us are educated and brought up is very expert in increasing the inner enemies. These inner enemies are called in Sanskrit Ripu. They surround the heart, and it's greed, it's anger, it's enviousness, it's illusion, and ultimately madness, you know, total obsession with an idea. Once my friend Radhanath Maharaj was sitting in a conversation with a very nice man, philosopher, and this O'Connell is his name, said, let me remember, we live in an age of mass distraction weapons. Most of you hold a representative of that in your pocket, you know, your constantly beeping mobile telephone. We live in this age where we are so much outwardly facing, and we have forgotten our inward treasures. So the first rule in mantra meditation means to take our minds back from this constantly, how do I look, what do people think of me, how is my Facebook account or Instagram, how is my body, is it shapely or is there a little bit too much on my behind, and so on. We become inward facing. It's called antamukha, by focusing our mind through a simple process called manasamharanam. I will teach you how this works in relation to mantra chanting. And as we do this, we unleash the spiritual potencies in us, which are not gone. They are only buried by our Western style of living, our outwardly facing. I think many of you know of Mahabharata. Who has heard or read the Mahabharata? Could I just see a little? Yeah. Not an overwhelming amount of readers. It's the greater history of the world, which has many, many spiritual secrets. And there you find a martial arts guru, a warrior guru who trained warriors, asking five princes to an demonstration, or you could say a learning experience, while shooting arrows. You might know in ancient times these arrows were empowered by very effective mantras that could do wonders when they were used in warfare. So he wanted to teach what he considered one of the most essential rules for a warrior to know. He had some students of his had fixed a wooden bird high in a big tree. I think it was a banyan tree, really far away from the princes. And then he asked the older Yudhishthira to take aim. He said, shoot your arrow in the eye of the bird. So Yudhishthira, it was the art of drawing the bow, he was taking aim. He said, then Dronacharya, the teacher, said, don't shoot now. Keep your posture, but tell me, what do you see? Yes, said Yudhishthira, I see you here, I see my brothers, the other princes. I see the tree. Leave, you're not qualified to even shoot the arrow. Go, stand by the side. He called all the other princes who didn't know what was going on, and always asked them before they were allowed to release the arrow, what do you see? And they all gave a similar answer. We see the tree, we see the bird, we see you, we see, what else do we see? Well, the there's just now birds came flying. And he always said in such a strong way, it must have hurt the pride in some ways, go, stand by the side, don't, you're not qualified to shoot. Then he called the warrior prince Arjuna. You have heard his name, he's there in the Gita. He said, Arjuna, draw the arrow. Genius. These were bows, my dear people. They were not like our toy goals from the archery shop. You know, they were really heavy bows. What do you see? Arjuna said, the eye of the bird, master. I've asked you a simple question, said Dronacharya. What do you see? The eye of the bird. Don't you see the tree? Don't you see your brothers? Master, I see the eye of the bird at the moment. Arjuna, you are qualified to shoot. The arrow sped from the bow, and I think I don't have to tell you the rest. Of course, he came, it didn't miss its target. This is focus. Mana Samharanam, and this type of Mana Samharana we do when we chant mantras. We collect our mind. Yeah, there are many things. There are people, and look how the yogi dances. It's absolutely elegant. And I see his prana energy flowing in his dance movement. Bring the mind back to the mantra. Oh, I see just now a very attractive person entered the hall. Bring the mind back to the mantra. Oh, I see my many thoughts going. Bring the mind back to the mantra. And as you do this simple practice, it's like you will enter the mantra. It's almost like where I live at my ashram, we have a train. And when you wait on the platform, you have 2 minutes. Or maybe only 1 minute, I've never counted it, because always when you have the chance, you get into the train. So, because if you know, you can go in the train and then the train brings you into Berlin. So in the same way, my dear everyone, get into the mantra and it can bring you wherever you are meant to go and so on. So this is Mana Samharana. So the first is, don't go in the past and in the future. Our mind usually oscillates. Do you understand? I'm not a native English speaker, by now you know, by my heavy accent. Oscillate and goes back and forth between what happened yesterday, what happened in the past, and then like the pendulum of a clock, what will be nice to happen in the future? No? What do I plan to do? Where do I go next when the workshop is over and so on? No? No, you bring it in the present moment. I will request Gaur Krishna to come here and sing. And perhaps Madhava, if you could be so kind, to come, to just that they experience. And while you chant, you absolutely come into present moment awareness. And whenever you see the mind wander, you will be surprised what comes next. It's good. How is it good? It's good because, yes, now you have caught the thief stealing. And you can bring it back. Come. No need. Come. Most of the time we don't even notice how our mind wanders. When we notice it, It's almost like noticing the subtle difference in the evening between still being awake and falling to sleep. Who can notice this subtle border in between? But here, when you notice it, my God, my mind has walked out again, you can bring it back. You can bring it. Krishna speaks in the Gita about this. Yata yata nischalati, wherever the mind goes, due to its very restless nature, one should certainly bring it back. Okay, let's do this now. What shall we tell you? Yes. We will chant a simple melody. Please take in the right posture, upright posture. Roll back your shoulders. You want to increase the volume of air of the lungs. You're now in the present, here in this beautiful hall at the banks of the Ganga. Please focus the mind on every single of these divinely inspired, not inspired, empowered names. Collected mind in the process of listening. And this will be the second part, no? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Krishna, Hare Hare.
us feel into the pause now. A few deep conscious breaths and keep on feeling. I always feel almost like a spoiled game when I tell the audience, okay, let's listen again, because some of us, including myself, would just like to remain in that space. Thoughts and words can only show a direction, my dear everyone. They can't replace the actual experience of chanting. The most important dimension, however, is still missing. We have not talked or exercised in this dimension. It is the activating the spiritual heart. I thought, because I have two workshops that I will talk in detail about this most important dimension of chanting in the bhakti tradition, of course. Tomorrow at 11:30 there will be a second part of this workshop, but perhaps not all of us have time to be there, and so I will just indicate this dimension. In the ancient Upanishads is a very interesting passage. It comes in the Chandogya Upanishad, where it is said that the body is a town with 9 gates. The eyes are 2 gates. The ears are another 2. Then 2 nostrils, another 2. The mouth is yet another gate. And 2 gates lie under the belt and are not discussed in great detail in the spiritual practice of the bhakti tradition. So within that town of 9 gates, the physical body is a special house or residence. That's the heart. Now within that heart, my dear everyone, lies a very special room, which is so vast that the entire universe and beyond can easily fit into this room. Think, well, this is not a material room, it is a spiritual room. It's a different space, it's an entirely different category. And it is here, in that sacred space of the heart, where the soul and the supreme reside. And all your spiritual prospects, that is, the treasures you can gain in the future in your spiritual practice. All this is in this little space of the heart. To reawaken this spiritual space is the aim of all genuine spiritual traditions. It's not everyone knows about this. In Christianity you have a lot on this. In Sufism you have a lot of it. In the bhakti tradition, and of course in the yoga tradition, you know, where you speak of the yoga zone, you know, and so on. Om Mani Padme Hum, the jewel in the heart, there in Buddhism. It's this sacred space. If you can be allowed, if you can permit it to enter this, you do not even see the passage of time any longer. you could sing for the rest of your life until your body drops into the Ganga if you sit at the banks of the Ganga. And this, my dear everyone, is these are more secret teachings, they are on one level you can say just chant or sing and be happy, finished. And that is also true on one level. But there are deeper levels to access, and every sincere chanter will get to know this. So I don't think I should get into it now. I'm watching the time, and I will never be invited again if I go shamelessly or over my allotted time. So, we have 5 more minutes. Perhaps there is a good question, but to what you have heard, no? Good question. How do I know that my question is good? Perhaps there is a question. Yes.
About the emotional part of the heart, and what's the relationship between the emotional part of the heart and the spiritual part?
Yeah, I think it does have a relationship. If you are in good emotions, it's you. Or you are in very, very difficult emotions. From these two positions, you can enter the spirit. You have some urgency, some eagerness to go further. A feeling of gratitude, for instance, is very helpful to enter the spiritual heart. Or just in general, a feeling of openness is very, very favorable to enter the spiritual heart. But when you enter it and you access the spiritual emotions, gratitude, a sense of desperation, a sense of feeling of joyous eagerness to find out, all this can be helpful. But what you will meet in the spiritual heart, what you will meet when the door swings wide open, is beyond the emotions we know in this world. It's described as a divine ingress, or divine, it comes from up to in your heart, no? And that's that brought us into the realm of ecstasy, bliss, boundless spiritual happiness. Unlimited vastness. You usually feel like, wow, there are no problems. Whoever said there is a problem, he was not in the space. And so on. Yes, you. Even at the time of death, which is a big challenge we all have to face one day, a person who is there is not at all disturbed. So it is different from material emotions. Yes. So let us finish this session again on the note of transcendental sound vibration. Gaur Krishna. This, by the way, is Gaur Krishna. I'm a member of the Gaur Krishna Bhajan band. And Madhava, you know already. Madhava, nice to have your presence, but we will now sorry, but I just wanted to say. So, I request you all now to again recollect what we have learned so far. Sit straight. Collect yourself. It shouldn't be difficult now where we have chanted and so on. We will sing one time the Maha Mantra and then end with the Ram Mantra. Please chant now. Hare Krishna. concern for a practice, now let us bring it a level higher. Body and mind, with full attention, go to each single name in the mantra. You are done. Thank you very much. Now I will just say, second part tomorrow, 11:30. I didn't intend this, but this, I know it's a little a cliffhanger, but sorry. For now, take with you body and mind focus, and you will see. Thank you once again. Hopefully see you again. Haribol.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. We're so grateful to have you here with us. And yes, please join us again tomorrow, 11:30 to 12:30, right after our morning kirtan session. So now we are going to break for a few hours.